You're listening to WCOM-FM, LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro, 103.5 on the dial, and live streaming from WCOMFM.org. Here's a reminder that the comments, views, and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily represent the opinions of WCOM, its board, and underwriters. From Main Street to Wall Street, the issues impacting your business, we're talking leadership, technology, politics, regulation, and success stories that inspire. It's time to focus on business. I'm your host, author, speaker, entrepreneur, and business consultant, Lee Strickland. I'm the CEO of Focus Resources and 2S Innovations, and founder of the Network for Business Growth. I've also created the Core Business Transformation System. And now today's program. Well, today starts my series on women in business and how women succeed as subject matter experts and entrepreneurs. My guests today are Mitzi Kincaid and Karen Boardman of Kincaid & Associates, PLLC. Now, Mitzi is my first guest, and she earned her JD degree from North Carolina Central School of Law, and she has a BS in Administration from the University of North Carolina, Charlotte. Prior to practicing law, Mitzi spent over 10 years in corporate accounting and finance positions. She is a member of the North Carolina Bar Association, the New Hanover County Bar Association, and the American Bar Association. Mitzi is also very active in her community. She works with Special Olympics and the American Heart Association, is a member of the University of North Carolina at Wilmington Cameron Executive Network, currently serves as the board chair of the Disability Resource Center, and is a governor-appointed voting member of the statewide Independent Living Council. She is licensed to practice in the states of North Carolina and South Carolina and before the U.S. Tax Court. Her practice areas are estate planning, probate, special needs, trust, and disability advocacy, business formation planning, corporate counsel, civil litigation and dispute resolution, and taxation. And my second guest today is Karen Boardman. She brings over 15 years of legal experience in transactional law, intellectual property, and litigation to Kincaid & Associates. Her experience is concentrated in all phases of intellectual property, including trademarks, patents, copyrights, licensing, and infringement. Prior to law school, Karen worked as a guardian ad litem volunteer advocate, investigating and protecting the rights of abused and neglected children, as an intern at the Domestic Violence Legal Clinic, where she worked to obtain protective orders for the victims and children of domestic violence. She published an article in the North Carolina Central University Law Review entitled North Carolina versus Bryant, paving the way for a comprehensive national sex offender registry. She is licensed to practice in the states of North Carolina and Tennessee and before the Eastern District North Carolina Federal Court. She earned her JD degree also from North Carolina Central University School of Law, the evening division though, and she has a BA in History and Political Science from the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. She enjoys listening to live music, volunteering as a financial advisor for her sorority here in Chapel Hill, learning to cook, spending time with her husband, Adam, and her cat, Kaylee. And let me tell you a little bit about Kincaid & Associates also. This is a law firm with locations in Wilmington, Raleigh, Charlotte, and Asheville. They are a general practice and business services firm serving the needs of individuals and businesses. Their goal is to provide exceptional legal services through timely communication and with a spirit of service. Their website is KincaidAndAssociates.com. Thank you, ladies, for joining me on the show today.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Lee. Thank you so much for having us.
Well, I'm going to ask you both this question. Why the law? Why become a subject matter expert in the law? And then why start a law firm? Mitzi, you want to take it first?
Sure. So why the law? You know, that question, I get asked that question a lot. And to honestly answer that question, I don't really know. When I was 6 years old, I wanted to be a lawyer and a checkout girl. And I knew that I wanted to be a checkout girl because I would go with my mom to the food line, and I would watch the girl push the buttons and check out the bananas and, you know, weigh the apples and play with the money. So I kind of knew that I wanted to be a checkout girl because of that. As far as the law, you know, I can only say that it was maybe divinity of some sort, karma, because I really didn't grow up with lawyers. My parents didn't graduate from high school. My mom got her GED. So, you know, we didn't have friends that were lawyers. We were never in trouble. So there were no lawyers. I didn't watch any lawyer programs on TV.
Did you watch Perry Mason or something and get a hit?
I didn't. Exactly. I didn't watch any of that stuff. So, you know, it was just an odd thing. And, you know, I still have the video. It's an old VHS tape, Laugh.
we're showing
about,
our age.
You know, me wanting to be a lawyer and a checkout girl. So I really have no good answer for that, Lee. Sorry. But I do have a better answer for subject matter experts. So that introduction was great. Thank you so much for that. I really am not as good as my introduction said, but thank you for that anyway. But
I'm sure you live up to it.
I have a business background. I spent many, many years in the corporate world and worked my way up, you know, from the Cube Village up to a walled glass office and kind of got to see how a company works from the inside out. And I knew when I went to law school, and I went to the evening program with Karen, and I'm really grateful that Karen is part of our team. She is an amazing attorney, and I'm so grateful that you invited her to come on the show with me. And Karen and I were in law school together, and I always knew that I wanted to own my own business. My father owned his own business, a very small business, but I knew it supported our family. And then I knew that in law school, I wanted to deal with money. I wanted to own my own business, and I wanted to deal with people's money. And wills, trust, business law, protecting what they had earned, teaching them how to earn more, and then wealth transfer, right? So it's wealth creation, wealth maintenance, and then wealth transfer. So I knew that that's what I wanted to do, which made law school pretty interesting for me because I always knew which classes to really pay attention to and which classes may have interested me, but I knew may not be part of my business plan.
Well, and we share some common background there, coming out of the cubicle world and making it up into the glassed-in offices in corporate America. And I think
exactly.
I mean, I got recruited out of corporate America to go into a small spin-out of a university, and then from there, I had to make a decision. You know, big corporations, small businesses. What am I going to do? And next thing I knew, I'm owning a small business. And so I want to ask Karen the question about being a subject matter expert, and then I want to come back and talk about being a subject matter expert and starting a small business, a law practice, and all that, that entails. But Karen, I want to hear your story about why the law and why Kincaid & Associates.
Well, greatly, I'm glad that you asked. You know, I've known since I was about 12 years old that I wanted to be an attorney. Prior to that, I thought that I was going to be an actress and a dancer and a singer. And at the age of 12,
I love these combinations, ladies.
I know. At the age of 12, I think that the singing had proven itself to not be where I was going to go. And I'm not sure how I came upon being a lawyer. I think that I had several family members and adults that were in my life that told me that I would make a good lawyer. And generally that's told to kids who like to argue. Yes, exactly. But I knew from the age of 12, and so nobody was really surprised when that's what I ended up doing. But I realized when I was in my undergraduate program that I didn't want to go straight to law school because I was exhausted. So I decided to take some time off after undergraduate and work in a law firm and in some legal departments of companies. And that's actually how I got involved in intellectual property. It was sort of by accident because I was just looking for entry-level positions, and I happened to get an entry-level position in the intellectual property department of a local company in RTP. And that's when I realized how much I really liked that aspect of the law. And so when I did end up going back to law school a few years later, I was still working full-time as a paralegal while going to law school at night with Mitzi. And so, you know, we each have a little bit of crazy in us because you have to have that in order to work full time and go to law school.
Amen.
Night.
I just finished a second master's degree going full time, working full time. My mother was sick. There was a bunch of things going on. And
it's
just like, yeah, you have to be a little bit insane.
A little bit crazy. Yeah. So when I went to law school, you know, the more classes that I took that had those aspects of intellectual property, I realized how much more that I wanted to be a part of that. I realized that it was important for me to help protect people's creativity. I am not a particularly creative person myself, despite my previous life as an actress, dancer, and singer, all before the age of 12. I'm not a particularly artistic person now, But where I find joy is in helping other people protect their own artistic visions and creativity. So that's why I decided to get involved in intellectual property. So I work to help people protect through trademarks and copyrights and trade dress, and, you know, make sure that what is theirs stays theirs.
Well, and I know that for my type of business, where I'm a subject matter expert in business, and I'm always writing, and I'm doing podcasts, and I'm doing all these things, that's been one of the biggest challenges for my business, is protecting that intellectual property. Because people don't think about, you give one client a spreadsheet, and I can think of, this is a local example, client paid me to build a financial model, and we did it. Next thing I know, it's in like hundreds of businesses, because one of their other consultants took a copy of it and then distributed it at one of the entrepreneurial events. And I started getting phone calls, and I was like, okay, I said, you got two choices, $150,000 or get rid of it. And they're like, wait a minute. I said, you're violating a copyright.
Mm-hmm.
That is owned by me and my client. It's not supposed to be out and being distributed in somebody's, but it's just a spreadsheet. And I'm like, it's not just a spreadsheet. It's intellectual property.
Right.
An article is intellectual property. And I think a lot of businesses overlook even the fact that their client lists, their contacts, all of that kind of stuff is intellectual property for the business. And so all businesses need their intellectual property attorneys.
Absolutely. And it's interesting, because a lot of folks don't realize that they need to be protected until they've been violated.
Right.
And then they say, well, wait a second, why is this happening to me? I'm like, well, because you didn't do anything to make sure you were protected. But folks understand it as soon as they've been violated.
Well, on the flip side, too, they don't take the education to educate their employees as to what is intellectual property and what are violations of it. Because I've walked into businesses where they bought one license for software and it's on, you know, 300 computers.
Sure.
And I'm like, okay, non-compliance, you know, you have to get the licenses. So we don't think about it even in what seems to be harmless little things that we do inside of our business. And then businesses get shut down for violating licenses, copyrights, patents.
Right, right. And it's interesting, because I have some clients, I've actually become pretty involved in the photographers community.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, photographers are acutely aware of how important their rights are in their photographs.
Right.
So they are very, very careful and very, very protective of that. But other businesses don't seem to realize that, you know, anything that you put together, your website, a PowerPoint presentation, a piece for a client, anything that they put together has intellectual property in it.
And has value.
And has value, absolutely.
Well, and that gets back to what Mitzi was saying about, you know, wealth creation, wealth preservation and maintenance, and then handing it off, because the value in most of our businesses isn't that we're in there running the business, it's that intellectual property that we create inside our businesses. And so, Mitzi, why did you decide to start your own firm and have this focus where you're bringing your subject matter experts together in the wealth preservation, serving the businesses and making sure they're doing it right, the intellectual property and all those elements? Why a law firm of your own?
Well, I was a corporate refugee, so when I left the corporate world, I decided that I didn't play well with others.
So, and I can attest to that.
I needed to kind of play by my own rules, in the rules of my profession, of course.
I think we're related.
I wanted to do something different. I wanted to have a different law firm with a different take on it, a different spin, a different billing model, and a different associate model. You know, I really don't swim with the rest of the fishes. I kind of like to go my own path, and sometimes that ends up with me beating my head against the wall, but sometimes it turns out to be really great. And in this case, it turned out to be really great, because I can take the morals, ethics, and values that I hold so strong, and I can recruit and retain good employees who have those same feelings and morals, ethics, and beliefs, and together we can serve clients who may be starting out, you know, bootstrapping a business and eating ramen noodles to pay for the marketing cards, you know, or the next trip to a convention. Or we could be in the middle of a business turnaround, you know, where someone has worked in their business their whole life with an economic downturn, or something's happened in a supply chain, they need help turning their business around.
or we represent someone who's worked their whole life and is ready to cash out now and see the fruits of their labor and retire. And so based, you know, and that's a lot, like you said, based on this intellectual property creation and the development of this product or service and brand name over the years. And I watched my dad do that. I watched him cold call, and I watched him earn every dollar every day. And I just had such admiration for that. And I like the flexibility of being able to have work-life balance. I never had that in the corporate world. And there was an expectation that you work, you get there before 7, and you don't leave until 8 or 9, and especially if you manage employees. And I thought there has to be more to this. There has to be a way to balance your life, to contribute to charity, and to be a functioning member of the community and do good work. Work doesn't necessarily mean work. And so this is my dream. It's something that I dreamed of, being able to do what I love and make a living at it. You know, I tell people I'm not wealthy in the pocketbook. I'm wealthy because my life is so full. I get to do what I want to do every day. Some days I don't work at all. Some days I work 9 hours. I get to pick and choose what I want to do. I get to pick and choose my clients, and I get to see them move along in this space as well and maybe take some of the pressure off of them, because sometimes they don't know these things, and it's what they don't know that's going to get them in trouble, and we'll talk about that later, I bet. And if Definitely. We can take some of that pressure off, then everybody is happy. Everybody, it's a healthier business model. And it means so much to be able to do what you want to do every day and make a living at it.
So I want to ask, because I know when I started doing my business my way, I'm not good with the rules either. I was known as the dynamite kid in corporate. When they say, can you tweak this? I was like, oh, it's broke. Let me just blow it up and I'll create something new. And so when I started my business and I was doing it my way and doing it in a non-traditional way, that sounds like you're doing your law firm. How many times did you hear, you can't do it that way? That's not the way it's supposed to work, and you know, all those kind of things.
Well, I still hear it today. We still hear it, and Karen, you know, can attest to this as well. We just view our clients as friends. We view them as partners. We do electronic things. We do things over the internet. We do Skype sessions. You know, we do non-traditional billing methods. We work together, and some folks are still looking at us saying, "You're not going to be successful," or "How can this last?" And you know, they're just kind of, I think I invite them to kind of look at the longevity, because, you know, I've been in business since 2007. And so we're just showing it very quietly, showing that, you know, using technology, being partners with clients, caring about clients, and understanding that money doesn't come first, service does, and then money follows. And having that kind of a model, I think, pays longevity dividends every time.
Well, I have to agree, because I remember, like, the first thing was, I started my business in 2002, and I think the first 18 months, all I kept hearing was, it doesn't work that way, you can't do that, you have to do this. And then the 18th month mark, people were coming to me and asking me, well, how did you grow your business? Why are you so well known in 18 months? As they were shutting their doors, because they kept looking at me and saying, well, I can't do that. I mean, I was literally telling them what I was doing. Here's the secret. And they're like, but I can't do that. Well, I can't do that. And I was like, well, yeah, you can. You just have to choose to do things that way. So what are the biggest challenges then, focusing on the clients, getting new clients, with that entrepreneur, that cold calling, that how are you connecting to your communities? Because you are in multiple cities. You have multiple locations. You have your team in each of these locations. So how do you and Karen connect and find the right clients that are going to get the concept and are the ones you want to work with?
Sure. Well, I'll take that question first and then throw it over to Karen. So we do a lot of referral work. We are so grateful for all of our clients who refer clients to us. And many times out in the community, when I'm with a client or talking to a client and a prospective client comes up, my client actually digs in their wallet or purse and pulls out my card to give to the prospect, and that always makes me super proud. My father gave me a piece of sage advice when I was starting my business, and he said, Mitzi, don't go into debt over your head. Don't get a big fancy office, right? Don't get big fancy furniture, right? And start small and ask for referrals. When you do a good job for somebody, don't be afraid to say, hey, if you know anybody who needs anything, will you tell them to call me? Be humble, right? And especially from a lawyer, because sometimes, you know, we're not always the most humble creatures. And that's exactly what I've done. And so for the first couple of years, it was tough. You know, I worked out of my home. We still meet people at coffee shops because that's just cool to do. But I really didn't have an office. And then I started with a very small office and a one-day-a-week assistant and just kind of grew my business as the referrals grew. And I encourage my staff, and Karen probably will talk a little bit more about this, I encourage my staff and attorneys to participate in the community, do charity events or participate in activities that you enjoy. Because when you meet people doing the things that you enjoy, you connect with them. And there's some camaraderie there, and there may be some trust. And they may be a business opportunity for you, as you to them. And so I encourage my staff to go out and enjoy life. And by meeting people, everybody is a prospective client. They may not need you now, but they will need you in the future. And so that's kind of the way that we've built this business. And I always think to myself, what if the phone doesn't ring tomorrow? You know, what if the calendar isn't booked? But you know what? We don't worry about that anymore because we have clients out there. They're pulling for us. We're involved in the community, and it just works.
Well, Karen, you want to take it?
Sure, sure. So building on what Mitzi said, we really don't focus on advertising or things like that. We really are a referral-based business, and we are very fortunate that we have done right by our clients, that not only do they come back, they bring their friends and they bring their associates. It's funny because clients can come from very, very random referrals.
Amen, sister.
I'm thinking of one right now that, you know, off the top of my head where we were in adverse litigation with a party, and the opposing party actually ended up referring us to someone who he thought we could help.
I have a similar story. I remember turning down a client, and he was a fairly prestigious client in the Raleigh area. And they said, well, he won't work with you. You're a woman. And I said, okay. But he wanted the meeting. We met and we talked. We had several meetings. And finally, I arrived to get the check from him one day. And at that point, I had realized what Mitzi was talking about. I was going to be banging my head against the brick wall. And I promised myself in my business I would not do flat forehead syndrome, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking at him and I said, I would love to take this check, but you're not going to listen to me. It's going to be a bad relationship. And I said, I just can't do it. I mean, and he was dumbfounded. And it was like, I want to say a week, 10 days later, somebody calls the office and he's laughing hysterically. And I'm about to hang up. He goes, no, don't hang up. And he starts laughing again. He finally gets straightened up and he says, you'll never guess who referred me. And he starts laughing again. And I'm like, okay. And he told me, and it was that guy that I had turned. And he goes, well, maybe you're the type of client she'll want, you know? And it's like, and so I was known for firing my clients or not accepting clients that people were dying to work with.
Right.
And it was just an interesting marketing thing. And that was, again, one of those things somebody told me, you can't do it that way. And I was like, well, I have to, because I'm not going to beat my head against a brick wall.
Sure, sure. Yeah, we like to meet with our clients. We always offer a complimentary session to meet with clients first to ensure that it's going to be a good fit.
Right.
And because they have to be as comfortable with us as we are with them. And we have to make sure that they're going to listen to us because, you know, I mean, we don't have to make sure that they're going to listen to us, because if they don't listen to us, it's just, you know,
it's more expensive.
It's going to be later.
Them, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's going right. to be much more expensive later. We tell them that, like, okay, well, you don't have to do what we say, but you're going to eventually have to do what we say.
And so, the cleanup of that is so much worse.
It always is. It always is. And, you know, it only has to happen to a client once. They don't ever do that again, generally.
Right.
But yeah, as Mitzi was saying, we remain active in our communities. We get referrals from the most random sources sometimes. And I think it's really just a matter of being out there and being genuine about ourselves and making people realize that they don't have to meet an attorney in a fancy wood-paneled office with, you know, leather-bound books on the shelves.
Mahogany row.
Exactly. Exactly. Because that's just driving up the cost to those clients. We want our clients to realize that we want to meet them in a place where they are comfortable, whether it be in our offices, which are very nice but very
simple.
Simple, exactly. Or we meet them in their office, or we meet them in a coffee shop or a restaurant or what have you.
I always say I have lots of corner offices with glass. Mm-hmm. They just happen to be at coffee shops.
Exactly, exactly. I've gotten a lot of work done that way.
I think I actually get more done going out for those meetings.
Sometimes I do. Sometimes yeah. I do. But it's just a matter of building what we have and making sure that our clients understand that they are the most important part, that it's not about making money. It's not about building our name or building our reputation off their backs.
Right.
Our clients have to understand that their businesses come first.
So what have been the major challenges in growing the business? And then as now that you've reached the size you are, what are the next challenges that you guys are anticipating?
Well, those are all great problems to have. And we watch our clients go through those problems and navigate the minefields of growth, right? It's right. growth. It's keep what you have and grow a little more, right? Keep what you have and grow a little more. You know, organic growth, whatever the brain children call
right.
it. So from a business owner, I always, you know, we have to earn every dollar every day. We don't have recurring revenue, right? We're not a recurring
right.
revenue stream. And so every year we have to not only get the same amount of revenue that we got last year, but we have to get a little more, right, to make everybody happy. And, you know, Karen just really succinctly kind of put that in place. You just treat your clients and put them first. And they're out there working for us. You know, she brought up a great point about advertisement. We sponsor the Coastal Entrepreneur Development Awards here in Wilmington, but that's really about it that we do. And I do that kind of on purpose because I've figured out that that really doesn't work for us. But what does work is valuing our clients, putting them first. And sometimes that means doing work for free, you know, because, you know, whatever it needs to be done, it gets done. You know, and clients remember that. And they send work your way. They go out of their way to help you and grow your business. And I'm always honored when that happens. And then logistically, we plan on businesses, you know, growing our business, growing our space. I'm currently looking to move out of our current Wilmington location and build a building of my own to house us a little bit better, to do things a little bit differently. We're always looking at computer infrastructure. Karen and I were just on a demo a couple of days ago with a technology for telephony. So we're always looking at how we can use technology to drive, you know, costs down and continue to be in the cloud. We're in the cloud. We're not really a paper-oriented law firm, and we have been from the get-go, so that's great. You know, that saved us lots of money not having to pay for space for file cabinets.
Right.
We're always looking for good associates. We just brought on a new attorney Monday. Her name is Nancy Guyton, another Chapel Hill graduate. You Chapel Hill ladies are outnumbering me here, a UNC Charlotte grad. And we're always looking for associates, but it really takes about 2 years to find them because they need to come to us. We don't really recruit. And Karen can attest to this too. We have people that ask us to come and work for us, and we have to evaluate them. They have to understand our model. They have to understand, you know, what our values are, and never waver from that. You know, somebody can tell you what they think you want to hear, but when the rubber meets the road, do they behave that way, right? And
right.
And so we want to grow smartly. I haven't set a cap on the number of attorneys that I want. I want it to be the right answer, you know. And I want attorneys that want to kind of work under this umbrella and have a good time and laugh and not take ourselves too seriously and enjoy what they do. And if that means we stay at these number of lawyers, which is currently 3, great. If we grow another one, super. If we bring on a patent agent, you know, whatever we expand is fine with me, as long as it makes sense to everybody, and most importantly, that new employee, because I want them to fit in. I want them to feel like this is kind of maybe their forever home. I know that's a silly phrase, but, you know, for an employee, I would want them to feel like they could stay here as long as they wanted, and as long as they were growing financially, personally, you know, then we all grow together, and that's my plan.
So as you look at that plan, do you see capacity concerns? Because I know whenever you grow slowly or you're growing, as you're described, the organic way, is there ever a concern you're just going to have so much work that 2-year recruiting timeline kind of crushes your growth in a certain period because you don't have the person to respond to that right then?
You know, that's a great question. You know, I'm not worried about a capacity issue right now because most of us work, you know, we work probably 30 to 35 hours a week. Some weeks it could be 65, you know, if
right.
there's a civil litigation or anything like that, or you're preparing for a mediation. But most weeks, that's not the case. And so we always have a little bit extra capacity. Me, myself, I have extra capacity as the business owner. I travel around to the different offices and meet with clients, and I'm involved in some extracurricular activities outside of this law firm, other entrepreneurial quests and ventures. So I can always pull back in if I need to, but I enjoy bringing in the work and sorting that out and just letting the lawyers and the administrative people run with it. They're all professionals. They have wonderful judgment. I love the work that they produce. My clients love the work that they do. And so I think, you know, right now we don't have a capacity issue, but I'm also not afraid of saying no. And that I couldn't have said that maybe 5 or 6 years ago, right? When you're right. first starting a business, you kind of take everything walking in the door, right?
Right.
And now we can afford to be a little more selective. And so we also can dial back that if we need to. If Karen's involved in a big case and it seems to be soaking up her time, she will tell me, hey, can you handle this? Or, you know, and then we just go back to our clients and say, hey, what is the time frame that you need this? Is it truly an emergency, or what do you need this for? You know, and again, we work with our clients to make sure that we understand their time frame and we respond accordingly. And that diffuses a lot of situations, because sometimes the clients may think they're under a huge deadline from a court or from some entity, and they're really not. Or they may not be aware that there's a deadline,
yeah,
and we
that's
have to
fun.
Light a fire
that's,
under
that's
them.
That's more
and
painful.
So, you know, yeah. So we watch that pretty closely to manage the capacity.
So, in your any given day, Mitzi, how's your time split between being the entrepreneur, the business owner, and practicing your subject matter expertise?
Well, that's a great question, and it varies. You know, because we have. You know, I do a lot of wills, trust, you know, business formations, nonprofits. So I meet with clients a lot during the day. And then in the evenings, you know, I work on accounting things. We have a CPA, but I also do some accounting here. You know, we pay our bills and things like that. So, you know, most of the time we run a pretty simple operation, actually. So our administration doesn't take too long. And that lets me spend most of my time when I'm working in the law firm with clients.
So when we're looking at this and analyzing what's the best decision you ever made as a business owner, I'm going to hold that over. I'm just going to kind of cue that up, and we're going to take a quick break. But think about what is the best decisions you've made and what's the worst decision you've made since becoming a business owner. And as I said, we're going to take a quick break and do some station identification, and then we'll be right back.
Focus on Business would like to thank our underwriter, Close HR Connections. Ann Close of Close HR Connections has been on the show, and she is a great supporter of WCOM-FM and Focus on Business. Visit their website, closehrconnections.com. Focus on Business is underwritten by Focus Resources. Their website is focusresourcesinc.com. That's focusresourcesinc.com. If you would like to become an underwriter for Focus on Business or any of the WCOM FM LP 103.5 programs or the station, visit the WCOMFM.org website for information on underwriting shows, becoming an individual sponsor, becoming a Golden Voice sponsor, or how to volunteer with the station.
And we're back. And so right before the break, we were talking with Mitzi Kincaid and Karen Boardman of Kincaid & Associates, and I asked Mitzi an important question. What's the best decision she's made since being a business owner, and what's the worst decision she's made? So, Mitzi, I'm going to let you take that now.
Well, you know, I make them every day. I make the best decision and the worst decision every day of my life, right?
Right.
You ride this train, right? So the best decision that I ever made was to not be a sole proprietor and grow my business into employees. I loved when I managed employees in the corporate world, and I could have easily just stayed a one-woman shop. I could have done the work myself or had a part-time employee and kept things really low-key, right? Hanging out in Wilmington or Charlotte, picking a place, and just kind of being low key. And I made a decision that I didn't want to, I wanted to do more. I wanted to have a more reach, and that came with sacrifices because you have to travel, you have to go and, you know, make sure things are good, and you have to make sure you hire quality people. But I knew that I could do that, and I knew there were great people out there, Karen being tops on my list. And that, you know, that was my best decision, was moving out of that sole practitioner role into a small firm, because now we have people of different subject matter experts. We've been talking about it. You know, we have subject matter experts around, or they're close to experts, or they can figure it out. And it's nice having different minds to spin ideas off of, because I like people who have differing opinions of me, and of the business, so that we can say, hey, what does this problem look like from three or four sides? And I value those opinions. I don't always, you know, follow the advice, but I listen and I try to understand maybe what these people are telling me. So that was huge. Huge for me. Huge decision. That was a watershed moment when I decided to do that, and I've never looked back. My worst decision was not doing it sooner. I was in the corporate world. I had my law degree. I was working in the corporate world. And people were saying, you know what, you're just being held back. Why are you still here? Because it was a comfy salary, it was cozy, it was easy. And I just kind of kept hanging on a little bit longer. And so, you know, that I should have done it a couple of years earlier than I did. And, full-time anyway, right? I moonlighted a little bit and started the firm, but really I should have kind of jumped off into the deep end a little bit sooner. It's not a regret. It's just kind of one of those decisions that you wish on the other side of it, you realize, yeah, they were holding me back, right? Because right. I look at what we've done, you know, as a team, and I could have started that process sooner.
So I'm going to ask you and Karen both this. So for women out there sitting either in the university or they're sitting in the corporate arena, they're in their little cubicle, what pieces of advice would you give them about taking risks where they're sitting? About taking risk, about being an entrepreneur, getting out of being held back and marching to a different drum. I'm going to let Karen start this and let you think about it, Mitzi.
Awesome. Great.
So, sure, just drop the ball on me.
Her face is priceless right now. So I can see the wheels spinning in her head.
Right. Well, my best advice is that life is too short to not do what you want to be doing. I know that that's not always an easy choice to make. I worked for many years in many positions that I did not love.
Right.
And I was really miserable. You look back and you realize that you were just punching the clock and just day in and day out.
You had checked out, but you hadn't left.
Exactly. Exactly. My mind wasn't in it. My heart wasn't right. in it. And so it's never been so important to me, or it's never been more clear to me than when I found a job that I really do love and a place that I really do love to, you know, that's the most important thing at this point, is it changes your whole perspective on things, because you realize, you know, you're in a position, you're with these people that you work with for 30 to 40 plus hours a week.
80 or 90 in the corporate world.
Exactly. And if you don't love these people and you don't love what you're doing, how much of your time are you spending with them that, you know, is just taking away from you
right.
as a person? I think it's really important to keep looking until you've found what it is that makes you happy. And if that means that going out on your own is what makes you happy, then do that. If it means continually looking for a different position, a different company, a different field, until you find what really makes your heart sing, and I know that that sounds really cheesy, it's so important, because life is just too short.
I know I can look back at my corporate jobs. There were very few that there were people that I shared values with.
Mm-hmm.
I know and at Ford, I was known for not speaking at meetings, and they're like, why are you not talking? You're supposed to present. I was like, because I'm not going to lie. And so if someone's asking me to say something I don't believe in, I'm just going to sit there quietly until somebody asks me, why are you not speaking? Right? Because you have to live those values. And if you can't live that, and I'm not saying all of Ford was that way, but you would get certain managers that thought it was better to withhold information. I'm like, well, if you withhold it, they can't make the right decision.
Right.
And so it's living that. And if you don't want to invite, go to lunch with somebody, that says something about who you're working with. So I can identify with that, making your heart sing and surrounding yourself with people you want to work with. Mitzi, what's your advice and your perspective?
So my advice and my perspective is don't be afraid to fail. Most people are so afraid of trying something and not being successful at it. Well, I try and fail at something every day.
Amen.
And I've just learned, you know what? I succeed at way more than I mess up. And I tell my staff, you know what? There isn't much that you can't mess up that we can't fix, right? We can fix this. And I guess my motto is I can fix it. We can get through it. And failure, and there's a million quotes about failure and success and things like that, but it's the truth. People don't try new haircuts. They don't try new food. You know, what if I don't like it? What if this doesn't do this? But, oh, what if it does? What if it turns out to be the best thing in your life? And at worst, it was something that you tried. And so people are sitting there, they may be listening to this radio program dreaming about, you know, designing their clothes, or they have this new idea, and they're just afraid because they don't know what comes next. You know, the unknown produces so much failure. I mean, the fear of failure it comes from the unknown, right?
Right.
And so people need to just stop thinking like that, right, and start gathering up what you do know, you know, and you'll figure out that you know more than you think you know, and that your chances of success are way better than you think. And that probably sounded like a Dr. Seussism now that I'm kind of hearing that in my head rattle around. But it's true.
We right? love Dr. Seuss.
You have to be not afraid to fail, because failure is an opportunity to learn. And we're all the great business people have failed. And you guys, you know, Karen knows this all too well, but I did not pass the bar exam the first time for North Carolina. And it was devastating, because I was voted most likely to succeed in our class, and our class was a brilliant class of people. And it just devastated me when that didn't happen, because I had never really failed at anything really, really important in my life. And it was amazing the amount of people that kind of put their arms around me, sent me emails, and they started telling me about the Kennedys who didn't pass. And this person, oh, did you know that took them 12 times? And, you know, and I realized that I was still me.
Right.
Right? Even though I didn't pass that bar exam that was so important to me, you know what? I was still Mitzi. I was still smart. I was still a lawyer. I just wasn't licensed, right?
Right.
I had still made it through that 4 years of law school with Karen. And it really brought me, because as a lawyer, sometimes you win cases, sometimes you lose. Sometimes you win clients, sometimes you lose them. You know, in life you do that. And so if you're sitting out there, or you're teetering on, you know, changing a job, doing anything, you know what? And Karen is right. She, you know, kind of stole my thunder going first, is life is too short, you know, because you need to do something, move forward. Staying still is not an answer, especially if you're not happy. If you're happy, super, right? There's a great yoga quote. I will say this is, you know, change. You're not a tree. If you don't like your life, move. You're not a tree. And I love that. It's very simple. But people kind of make up those reasons, from failure to I'll do it tomorrow. And that's what I would say. Please don't be afraid to fail.
Well, and I think a lot of times the fact that I speak on this a lot, and I know I was out in Winston-Salem, and I'd said something when I was talking about it. It's like we often get so worried about what somebody's going to think about us failing, and they're too busy worrying about what they're afraid they're going right. to fail, or their car broke down, or they're really not that involved in what we're doing. It really is not going to make or break their day, and so people don't remember. I mean, we put more emphasis on, okay, what if it doesn't work, or what will people think, or whatever, then unless it affects them directly, most people don't even keep score.
Yeah. They're not paying attention. They really, you know, not as much as you think they are.
Well, it might be a passing thing. Oh, that business failed, or that didn't work, or what happened to that? But it's not make or break in their lives, and it's not going to be there very long. And if it is, there's something wrong with them if they're more concerned with my life than their own.
And that's their problem and not yours.
Right. Well, and I know one of my neighbors had a little girl, and I think she was about 10, and she came over. Her name was Brittany. And we were teaching her to paint. And I had taught myself to paint years ago, just as I had always been interested. Long story, I ran a bookstore. We had paints to write off because the students kept opening them. And I asked her, could I take it home and try it? And my manager's like, yeah, go ahead. And so I started painting. Well, she came over one day and she said, can I do that? And I was like, sure, you know. And she goes, well, it might not come out. And I was like, it could come out. I mean, it takes practice. I mean, the first painting I ever painted, that was the flattest, ugliest waterfall you have ever seen. Couldn't get those three dimensions on that two-dimensional plane. But it took time. And she said, well, you're not afraid to do anything. I said, because I don't really worry about if I'm going to fail, if it's going to work. I will never sing an opera. I will never be on The Voice. I'm Edith Bunker singing, you know, those were the days. But that doesn't bother me because that's not what God intended me to do. If he'd intended me to be a singer, he would have given me a voice to sing. If I'm going to write something, I know I tell my clients, come on the radio, write an article. They said, well, what will people think? What if somebody argues or disagrees with me? Great, you started a dialogue, right? And that's, we hold ourselves back not trying. And we've already failed if we're not willing to try. We just failed inside and rather than where everybody can see it.
That's right.
So if you had to give pieces of advice to anybody setting out there in their business, not as a lawyer, but just as a business owner, as a subject matter expert, what would you advise them to do to make themselves stand out from the crowd and to be their most unique selves when they're doing their career, their business, whatever field they're pursuing? Mitzi, I'm going to put you on the spot first this time. Karen's thinking it, I can tell.
Well, Karen knows what a character I am, so she knows what exactly probably how I'm going to answer this, but be yourself. Sometimes I wear cowboy boots into the office.
We are so related.
And Karen knows this. Sometimes, you know, on a Friday, I could be spotted in a bathing suit in the Jeep because I'm kind of working, kind of not. And if a client strolls in, well, there it is, right?
Right.
And I'm not pretending to be something I'm not. Even when I'm with people that look a certain way or do a certain thing, I always am respectful. I'm always respectful of people in their position. But, you know, you have to just be yourself.
Right.
And people and clients love that about anybody. And again, it comes back to, you know, I had to conform to the corporate world for years. And I just knew that that wasn't the case. Here's a great example I can give to you is, you know, I knew back then employees didn't like to work an 8-to-5 day. I had some people who were morning people. I had some people who were night owls, you know, who slept late. And I finally just said, forget this schedule. I don't understand it. We don't have to have it as long as we have coverage. Let's talk about it and you pick your, you know, let's figure this out. And, you know, the management across this big company took a big gasp. What is she doing? You know, we can't do this. It's 8-to-5. And productivity shot through the roof, you know. And the same thing, I was always for different, you know, business casual dress, you know, nothing showing anything, nothing dirty, but, you know, dress yourself, you know, and to, you know, Karen's point about creativity, you can be as creative as you want in your role. You just have to think about it, right? Creativity comes in many different forms, and so does authenticity. And if you're creative and authentic, people see that. And they appreciate that, and in whatever way it is, right? And don't judge yourself against someone else. And that's really hard to do, especially as women. You know, I recently saw the Australian documentary Embrace. I don't know if you have seen that yet. I saw a private screening in Charlotte, and it was a packed theater, and it was a wonderful documentary about body image, about women, you know, and about how we are continuously seeing all these images. And we sometimes want to be them instead of who we are, right? And
right.
We don't love ourselves because we're too busy being in love with something that's not even real, you know? It's Photoshopped or whatever they do to those things. Karen knows all that stuff. And so, you know, be authentic with yourself and show that to your clients. Show that to anybody, right, in any relationship. Be your authentic self. And I think people will either see that you're a good fit for them or not, and they'll figure that out faster. And then don't be afraid to be creative. If you're an inner artist or an inner singer, Karen, you know, bring that out every now and then.
You don't want me to bring that out.
And that's just part of being who you are.
I'm kind of like a church, the joyful noise unto the Lord. But it says make a joyful noise. It doesn't sing perfectly.
Right.
But being the best us, I think, as women, I don't think we're always encouraged to that in corporate world. I remember I was hosting some of the other women candidates coming in, and one of the executives asked if I think they would fit into that environment. And the woman happened to be Asian American, was foreign-born, female, all these different scores on the diversity list. And then his phrase to me was, do you think she could fit into the white male establishment? I said, I was born here. I'm white. I'm not male, but I don't fit. So, no, the answer is, if you want diversity, you have to let people be the best them, mm-hmm. whether that's mm-hmm. 6 o'clock in the morning or midnight when they're working, whether they're mm-hmm. wearing jeans and a T-shirt or they're in a three-piece suit, if they're bow ties and, you know, wire rim glasses, whatever that is, we have to take away those cubicle limiting parameters and stop trying to put square pegs in round holes.
Right. Well, to answer your earlier question, I think the way to get yourself to stand out from the crowd, it's not just what Mitzi said, but about being yourself. It's by doing the best job that you can do. Whatever you're producing, whatever service you're providing, do it to the absolute best of your ability. And that will shine through to people. When you're doing something that you love, that will also shine through to people. They will know that you have a passion for it, and that will help you stand out. Because if you're doing something that you don't love, people can tell. When you're doing something that you absolutely love and you're doing it to the best that you can, people know that, and they will gravitate towards it.
Well, and I think a mistake a lot of women make, and I'm going to say some men too, but I think I see it with women more, is we undervalue what it is we really are. And then we look at those images, or we look at how somebody else's career is going in our corporate world, or we compare ourselves to someone else and say, we're not that. And that's right, we're not. God made them something else.
Right.
He made us each something, and that's what we're supposed to maximize. That's how we're supposed to be our best self and help encourage others to be their best selves. So if someone's sitting there in their cubicle or even in their glass-walled mahogany row office, what is the one thing that you would tell them that would make the biggest difference in their career, in their life, and how they're achieving their best self? What's the one piece of advice you had received or something that you've learned? And Mitzi, I'm going to go back to you, and I see Karen still. Her wheels are spinning, so I can't see if your wheels are spinning, but...
Oh, boy. Okay, if I could be any fruit. No. Okay, I got this. I'm buying time. No. Actually, you know what? Whatever you are thinking or afraid of, it's not going to matter in the future. That's really the truth. There are most things, and I've been through tragedy, I've been through loss, I've been through super success, super failure. And you know what? In the long line of our little dash on our tombstone or marker or whatever it is, you know what? Most things really don't matter. And we as a society, you know, our blood pressures are going up, people are on pills, and we worry significantly about things that really aren't going to matter in the long run. And, you know, you need to give every decision its due diligence. But how much due diligence and how much long-term worry, right?
Right.
You know, right. And again, you know, these little quotes are great. You know, you can't change the past. You really don't know the future, but you can live in the now and you can be present every moment, washing the dishes with your children, in your job, you know, being spiritual, whatever you're doing, you can be here and not worry about it, right? And not, you know, not think about it so greatly, because it's really probably not going to matter in the future.
Karen, what fruit are you? No, I'm just kidding.
So, some of the best advice I've received is to remember that your job does not define you. So, people often, you know, when you meet them, you say, you start out right after what is your name? What do you do? And that's it's the first question out of a lot of people's mouths when you're networking, when you're meeting people. And I've learned, you know, I have the instinct to say I am an attorney, but I like to turn it around. And when people ask me what I do, I say that I help people.
Right.
And it's not just that I'm an attorney. There's so much more to my life. So yes, it's important, as I said earlier, to find a job and a company situation that you're comfortable in, because you do have to spend so much time with these people, but it is also only one portion of your day and of your week. There is also so much more that you do, whether it be spending time with your family, your pets, your faith community, your
singing and dancing
and acting on the side. Really, people don't want to see that, you know. If you're a pop culture junkie, if you like going to the movies, if you like going to concerts, whatever it is that makes you happy, you're doing all those things. Your job should not define who you are.
Well, and I think that's an excellent point to wrap up on, because believe it or not, time is up.
I can't believe it.
The time has flown by. I want to thank Mitzi Kincaid and Karen Boardman of Kincaid & Associates for joining me on the show today to kick off the Women in Business series for this month. And their website is kincaidandassociates.com. And ladies, it's been great. We'll have to have lunch and continue this sometime. And everyone, until next time, stay focused on the important things.
Part of the visibility equation. It's your market presence. It's the innovative competitive position.
There's a man down on the corner holding a sign. You know, I think he's right. Says the end of time. Saw a newsman on TV in a Colorado town, telling how some madman shot innocent people down. Gotta hate to think what lies ahead if we don't get back to the Bible, start doing what Jesus said. We gotta pray like we've never prayed before. We gotta fight like a soldier in a war. Take a stand, every woman and every man down on our knees. We gotta beg and plead. We can't give up. We can't give in. Till God blesses America again. I wonder what old Thomas Jefferson would say if he could come back from the grave and talk to us today. Would he tell us that this country is just what he had in mind? Or would repent and turn to God be the words he cried? All of this low living comes with a high cost, and America needs to wake up before everything is lost.